Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 9:13, March 9th, 2023. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Olson, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel. We'll be joined by a couple more senators here shortly. I apologize for the late start. We were at a joint meeting with the governor this morning, so we got delayed a little bit. So I apologize for that. But this morning, the committee will hear a presentation comparing employee retention data between the defined benefit and the defined contribution plan. This is one of several hearings that we've had in the past and will have in the future on the subject of retirement as we work through that issue. But today is going to be on the public retirement system only. The committee will take a look at the teacher's retirement comparison in a forthcoming Senate Finance Committee hearing. We thought it would be better to separate those two so it'll make the data a little clearer and understandable as we work through both the PERS system and the TERS system. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and ask Mr. Alexic Painter to come forward. He's the Director of Legislative Finance. He's going to take us through this presentation. And again, this is only part of the entire package, only the PERS system. We'll do the TERS at a later date. Mr. Painter, could you introduce yourself for the record and take us through this our presentation, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter, Director of the Legislative Finance Division. So this presentation sort of has two parts. The first is looking at state government vacancies more broadly, so comparing that to the last several years, comparing that us to the nation as a whole, and then also looking at our vacancy rates across different ways to slice the data. Then we'll be looking at retention data from the Division of Retirement Benefits that compares retention data for PERS employees in state and then also for non-state PERS employees. So for our current vacancies, the data sources here are mainly from the Office of Management and Budget. They have data that shows the filled status of positions from the state accounting system. I would note that this data excludes the state corporations, the University of Alaska, the Alaska Marine Highway System, the judiciary, and the legislature. So it's limited to the executive branch. And even then, there's some that are outside the state accounting system and are not included. So this is not the full state, but it's the vast majority of state employees are covered here. The data shows whether a position was filled as of the 15th of each month. So it's possible that a position was filled on the 1st and vacated by the 15th or vice versa. But we've often used this as a proxy for whether it's filled for the entire month, just to see if it's filled in the middle. And then to avoid seasonal distortions, all of these slides use permanent full-time positions, PFT positions as they're called only. We're not looking at seasonal positions or temporary positions, both of which will create some seasonal fluctuations that can kind of hamper the comparisons. This first slide shows this for the state our budgeted PCNs in the blue line on top versus the filled PCNs going back to January of 2022. And so from, January of 2015.
And explain what a PCN is?
Sure. So PCN stands for position control number. So when we're talking about budgeted positions, where each position is assigned a position control number, PCN, and that is used to track it in the accounting system. So when we say, what is a position? We're looking at one PCN, one number of a position. Sometimes they get double filled. Sometimes they're used for multiple positions. But generally, that's a pretty good proxy for a budgeted position. So during the period 2015 through 2018, the number of budgeted PCNs declined substantially by several hundred. During that period, we were reducing the budget, and we're deleting long vacant PCNs. Since then, the number of budgeted PCNs has ticked upward slightly. The number of filled PCNs has actually sort of steadily dropped during this entire period. Hasn't dropped much in the last few years, but it's continued to drop a little bit, even as we've added PCNs to the budget and the rate of decrease, as we'll see in the next graph, of the filled PCNs has been faster than we've actually shed the budgeted PCNs. So the differences you'll see over time in our vacancy rate is not just due to the fact that we're deleting PCNs or anything like that. In fact, it's continued despite having removed many vacant PCNs during this period.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would it be possible to get this percentage difference, the delta between the two, over that same time frame?
Through the Chair, Senator Wilson, that's the next slide. So slide 5, we go on to that, shows the same data as percentages, so percentage of full-time PCNs that are filled each month. And I showed the first slide to really just show that, you know, the budgeted number has changed and has actually went down and then back up. But during that entire period, the percentage filled has steadily decreased. So in the beginning of 2015, something around 89% of budgeted PCNs were filled. By the end of 2022, that number was about 84-85%. So it's decreased by about 5% during that time and has sort of gone down steadily. There's obviously jumps in the data, but this is not a new trend to have more and more vacancies. It's been a problem building at least since 2015. And note that 2015 is our start year in this data just because that's the data available in the current state accounting system. We could try to work with OMB to get data farther back, but this does at least take us to the period before we started large budget cuts in the 2016-17 period. So it does give us a longer time horizon.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, thank you. Director Perrin, do you know when the last job-wide classification studies happened?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, there was a classification study that was done, I think in 2009, but was not implemented. I'm not sure when the last one was implemented.
Okay, thank you.
Next slide, please.
This next slide, also data from Office of Management and Budget, shows the turnover rate. So the blue line is the percentage of positions hired each month, and then the red line is the percentage of positions that are vacated each month. The turnover rate is adding the two. And so obviously that turnover rate makes it sort of doubles the true change, but that's just the standard way to try to combine those two into one rate. So again, this one goes back to the beginning of FY18, so July 1st, 2017, and our turnover rate increased through mid-2019, decreased actually during the pandemic, went down from about 6% to 4-5% during the pandemic in 2020, and then has increased again, peaking at about 7% and hovering in the 5-6% range in most months. So the time of our lowest turnover rate by month was actually during 2020, during the pandemic, which, as we'll see, is unusual among other states. The next slide here compares Alaska, which is blue line, to data from the National Bureau of Labor Statistics. They have a feature called the Job and Occupational, I forget how you get to the acronym JOLTS, but the JOLTS data that that shows turnover by job type. And so I compared the turnover rate for state and local government employees nationally to the turnover rate that we saw from that OMB data. I would note that this is not seasonally adjusted and the national data, as ours is not, but there may be differences in how other states may categorize positions. So you do see seasonal spikes in the national data that aren't quite matched by ours because we budget differently for those seasonal positions, and other states have a variety of systems. But you can see that generally our turnover rate has been, you know, 1-2% higher than the nation as a whole, other than during the pandemic when ours went down, and nationally it did not particularly go down. But the ours has been consistently higher than the nation as a whole for state governments. OK, Okay, so going on to slide 8, so we're looking at the full-time PCN vacancy percentage by agency for calendar year 22. So this is last calendar year. This is spanning two different fiscal years, but just the last full year we have. So I ordered the agencies by the most PCNs to the least. So you can see the table at the bottom shows the number. DOT, which with the most PCNs has about 2,400 PCNs, whereas the governor's office with the least has 156. So not all of these agencies are anywhere close to the same size. The highest vacancy rates are the governor's office, although again, they have very few. The Department of Revenue, Labor and Workforce Development, Family and Community Services, and Commerce. The lowest vacancy rates are the Departments of Fish and Game, Transportation, and Environmental Conservation, as well as Education and Early Development. And that line there shows the statewide average of 14.2% of full-time positions, so you can see which agencies are above and below the line. And when we get into the next couple of slides, you can see some of the reasons for why that might be, but to give you just some background. So if you look at the sort of positions that have high vacancy rates, a lot of them are low range positions, low wage positions. The governor's office has many, and the Division of Elections has many low wage positions that have a high vacancy rate. The Department of Revenue and both the PFD division and the Child Support division has a fair number of those positions. Labor has a fair number of those as well. So generally, and then Family and Community Services, not all of those are low wages, but a lot of them are high vacancy rate positions. Whereas some of these agencies that have low vacancy rates, Fish and Game, Environmental and Conservation, a lot of those are career scientist positions or other career track positions that tend to have a lower turnover rate, although recruitment for new people is often challenging. These tend to have a little more stable career paths than some of those lower range positions that have more turnover, as we'll get into.
Okay, next slide.
So this next slide shows by range. And so in the state budget, in the state accounting world, most positions are assigned a range between 8 and 30. 8 is the lowest, 30 is the highest. A range 30 is, the chief psychiatrist at the at API, for example. There are very few of these positions at the far highest ranges. The low ranges, again, are fairly few at those range 8. That's something like an office assistant 1, the true entry-level position. And so the highest vacancy rates, range 29, which most of these are psychiatrists of API. I think of the 12 positions, 9 of them are either psychiatrists or pharmacists. Particularly highly in demand roles. But again, there's only 12, so we're not talking about very many. These low range positions have the next highest. So these 8 through 11 have a persistently higher vacancy rate than the other ranges, as we see. So the highest vacancy rates among where there's a fair number of positions are really those low range 8 to 11 jobs. And we'll see on the next slide, I'll have some of the PCN or the position titles that have the highest vacancy rate. But generally, the highest rates are among those lowest paid positions.
Okay, and we've been joined by Senator Bishop.
So I guess there's two slides from now that talks about the highest position titles. This next slide shows the vacancy percentage by location of where the position is. So again, the statewide average is about 14%. The most positions are in either Anchorage, Juneau, or Fairbanks. All of those have vacancy rates that are pretty close to that statewide average. The low vacancy areas are the Mat-Su Borough. That has the lowest of any of the regions. Kenai Peninsula Borough, I actually pulled out Seward because it didn't follow the trend, also has a fairly low vacancy rate. The areas with the highest vacancy rates are Seward, Bethel, Nome, and Ketchikan. Most of those positions in Seward are work for either the Spring Creek prison there or AvTech in Department of Labor. And then the other two locations, it's a variety of departments. But again, some of these locations are in excess of 20% vacant compared to the statewide average of about 14% that those larger regions hit. Mat-Su Borough, I think, is about 7 or 8%. So by far the lowest vacancy rates occur in Mat-Su. This next slide, slide 11, shows the position titles with the highest vacancy rate in calendar year 22. So we have the position title. Some of these are a little hard to understand. I'm sorry, the state accounting system does not have the most descriptive names. I'm happy to translate any of these. Note that for these names, I combined job series that have multiple levels. So you may have an office assistant 1 that's a range 8 and then an office assistant 2 that's a range 9 and so forth. I combined those job titles so that we had kind of bigger samples. Otherwise, you'd see, you know, 4 types of office assistant in the top level or this top thing. And then I also only have job classes with at least 25 people because you get some outliers with just very few individuals. These are the top 24. That's just what fit on the slide. Those are all the ones with a vacancy rate in excess of 18%. So this shows the vacancy rate in calendar year 22 for those position titles, and then the ranges that job class works out to. So for a public health nurse, they can be anywhere from a range of 22 through 26 throughout that series. That is the number 1 with nearly 40% vacant. In fact, 3 of the top 10 positions are various types of nurse, number 1, number 9, and number 10, all in 24.5% or above. These are all fairly high paid positions, at least range 21, but have very high vacancy rates. There's also a number of these lower range positions, child support specialist, for example, office assistant, which this is the largest group here, are ranged 8 through 12, so it's the lowest rank on here, well, the lowest bottom anyway. And then juvenile justice officer, again, fairly low range positions, in excess of a 20% vacancy rate, probation services specialists, those can range all the way up to from 15 to 20. 20 is the supervisory position, again, in excess of 20%. Probation officers as well, high range, high vacancy rate, a pretty wide variety. There's 5 job classes within that series. I would note there's 2 positions on here that have, you know, wildly higher ranges. Those aren't because they're paid way off the scale. There are a couple of unions that have different pay scales. So the 51 through 53 are just a different pay scale than the rest of the state. It doesn't really translate quite to the rest of the state scale. So again, you know, if you look at these, you can see that the positions that are most likely to be vacant are these nursing positions, and then some of these lower range positions like office assistants, the entry-level probation officer positions, as well as some, you know, hard-to-fill professions that may be, you know, difficult to find people for. Some of these, you know, maintenance positions, blue-collar positions where there's been difficulty for the state to compete in wages with the private sector.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, Dr. Painter, did I miss why the university was left off?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, the university is not part of the state accounting system, and they don't really budget positions like the rest of the state does. They have very different ways. They use pools for many faculty. So you could analyze them separately, but you can't really compare one-to-one with the rest of the state because they budget their positions differently than we do.
Thank you.
Also, I think they have a different retirement system, most of them also.
Okay, so that moves us on to the second part of this presentation, which deals with historical retention data. So this is data from the Division of Retirement and Benefits. It covers FY03 through 22, so 20 years of data included here. It shows whether employees hired in a given fiscal year are still employed by the same PERS employer in subsequent years. So if somebody is hired in FY03, it'll show, are they still there in FY04? Are they still there in FY05? And so on through the end. It's broken out by employer in 3 categories. So the state as an employer, so we are the largest PERS employer. There's other SBS employers and then other non-SBS employers. We'll talk more about that SBS distinction in a few slides when we get to the non-state items. We also have it broken out by the different retirement systems. Again, we're not going to cover TERS in this presentation. We're also not going to cover the police and fire employees who have kind of a different retirement system. In this presentation, there's very few of those, and I'm not particularly confident in all of the data, so we're working with retirement benefits to ensure the accuracy of that data. There's just fewer employees, so the sample sizes get pretty small. So this presentation will cover the PERS non-PF employees, so that's the majority of PERS employees who are not public safety and fire employees.
I think it'd be helpful for the public following along if we try not to use the acronyms. We just pronounce the actual issue we're talking about. It'll slow us down a little bit, but it'll make it easier for the people that aren't familiar with all this lingo.
Sherman, yes, I will try to not do that, although with PERS and TERS, it's difficult to say those the entire thing each time. PERS, Public Employee Retirement System. And then finally, the data distinguishes between employees in a defined benefit or defined contribution, DB or DC system. So the state made the switch in July of 2006. So employees who began their state service in FY07 were entered into the defined contribution system. Employees who began their state service prior to July 1st, 2006 were entered into the defined benefit system. So one limitation of this data is that if an employee leaves and comes back, they show up as a new employee when they return. So, you know, for example, I started as a PERS employee in 2006 and left, came back, left and came back. So I've continued service since 2013. I would show up in this data three different times. I think that's going to be pretty frequent. And it does make it look like those retention rates are probably lower than they really are, because any break in service shows up as them leaving the system, and people may leave and come back. As long as there's no systematic difference between the behavior of different employees, that wouldn't skew the data. However, those first years of the DC system, you have nobody who's returning and shows up that first year. So somebody who's hired in FY07 in DC is by definition a new employee. They can't have been a returning employee. If they were a returning employee, they'd show up as a DB employee. So those first couple of years, it's possible if there's some systematic difference between the retention of a returning employee versus a new employee, then that could skew the data. We don't know if there's a systematic difference, so it's sort of an unknown, but just keep in mind that there is some margin of error here that's a bit unknowable about whether there's a difference between those two employee types just as a class.
I try not to use the acronyms. It's going to make things harder to follow. And we've had a presentation previously where people had a very difficult time following it. Not by you, but it was another presentation. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, thank you for being here and running these numbers. Your second bullet, you talk about whether they're with the same employer or not, and maybe could you just help us? There's 14 or 15 departments in the executive branch, legislative branch. Is the state of Alaska 16 or 17 employers, or is the state of Alaska one employer?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the state of Alaska would be one employer. So they'd show up as still being a state of Alaska employee, just not the same department, but it'd be the same PERS employer, which is the state.
Thank you. And then
follow up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, you talk about, you're going to give us in these slides retention data. When we look at the financial reports, the pension systems, they use turnover data. Can you just give us an orientation? How do those two numbers differ?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. So, you know, when you look at the turnover data that I presented earlier, it's kind of, it looks like it's just a percentage of the current of the number of employees, but you don't necessarily know, has one employee been there for 1 year and then they leave, or have they been there for 10 years and then they leave? In fact, one thing that we see is that I think about 30 to 40%, depending on the employer, of employees leave within their first year as a state employee or a municipal employee. So if you just look at those turnover data, data, you tend to see that a lot of people just leave right away versus seeing how many of the people who have already been there for 10 years are then leaving. So it allows you to look a little more granularly about when are people leaving, how long do they stay before they leave, and how many of those sort of veteran employees who've been there for many years stay versus when you're looking at just turnover. You know, a lot of that turnover takes place in the first couple of years before somebody's necessarily, you know, become fully proficient in their job if they're entering the profession. So it's sort of two different ways to look at it. If you're looking at, is the goal to have, you know, 10 or 20 year long employees or 30 year employees, you can see how many are doing that versus if you're looking at just turnover, you know, you can't really distinguish the type of how much if you're losing veterans or new people.
Okay, go ahead and continue.
Okay, so this first slide is comparing for the state as an employer, for those non-police and fire or public safety and fire employees in PERS, the retention rate, comparing the year that people enter at state employment. So for ease of understanding this, there's a couple of translations in this data. So the first is I averaged 4 years together into four-year classes. If we had the full 16 lines, it's a very difficult chart to read. The four lines, it's a little bit easier to read. It's still a lot of data, but it's at least a little easier to see. The next slide is a different comparison that does show some year by year, but this way we can get all of the years in there. And then the other thing is that we converted all of these so that there's a year one, year two, year three. So everybody's first year, and that's after being there for a year, not their first year, is put on the same line. If you do them, you know, FY03, FY04, you just see a bunch of parallel lines. Again, it's really difficult to make any sense of it. So translating them all to one, you can compare those items. And again, if you look at the next one, you can see some of the trends over time that may be a little hidden in this particular view. So I'm going to try to present two different views of the same data so you don't get a skewed view by some of these translations we've done to make the data easier to understand. So this first four-year class, the FY03 to 06, which is blue in the slide, in the line, goes out the farthest because it's the oldest, and is the defined benefit group here. So this is the group that entered in the defined benefit system and then remained in that system. And you can see, again, that about 30% of people don't make it through their first year in all of these groups. So, you know, we're starting all of these lines at about 70%. That's because, again, about 30% of employees don't make it their first year, through their first year with the state. And then it's a declining curve. So the red is the first 4 years of the defined contribution system. The green is the next 4 years, covering people who entered from FY11 through 14. And then the last is FY15 through 18. That's the most recent we have on here. If we had a more recent class, they'd only have a couple of years on here that you have the full average. So these are just the years in which you'd have all 4 years available for your average. So a couple of takeaways, if you're looking at just the percentage differences between the lines, the 15 through 18 employees are, you know, visually just lower than those others. So the people who entered more recently have worse retention. By year four, they're on average 46% of those employees are still there versus the others are 49 to 50%. And that sort of makes sense given what we saw a few slides earlier where we looked at that vacancy rate. The vacancy rate of state positions has steadily increased since 2015. So it would make sense that the people who have entered more recently, there's less retention. So that could be to do with the budget challenges during that period or to do with other things, but very clearly that line is lower than the others. There's also in these years, you know, 6 through 10, there's a difference between the defined benefit 2003-2006 and other lines of about 2%. So, you know, from in year seven, for example, you can see that it's about 2% more people from that 03 to 06 class are still employed than those 07 to 10 or 11 through 14 classes. And that remains, but by year 12, some of that's gone away. But by year 12, you're only at 27% of people remaining anyway, so you've lost the vast majority of employees under any of these systems and under any of these comparisons.
Are you done with the slide?
Yes.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Mr. Painter, online on the defined benefit plan, on the trend that's going down to what you just spoke to, is that due to retirements?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, some of it probably is. You know, on all of these, some of this is retirements. There have been DC people who have retired because they had years of service with other employers. And there are people who may have retired who, again, you know, you wouldn't hit your 16 years to vest if you actually started in 03, but if you were a returning employee who started in 03, or if you had worked for other employers for much of your career and then started in 03 and retired during this period, some of that would be retirement, and some of that would be leaving for other reasons. We don't have data for all of these years that distinguish between those. The Division of Personnel had a report that they used to publish that would they published it on their website between FY05 and 11. They would distinguish between retirements and leaving to another employer or leaving, you know, state service altogether. That report is no longer produced, and we've asked if they still have that data, and they have not yet gotten that to us. But I think that would be a piece that would be helpful to see, is how many of these people are retiring versus how many are just leaving state service. But we don't have that data, and they weren't able to provide it in time.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just would just like to say I think that's important to know.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Director Painter, do you know, I mean, some of this looks like the FY 15 to 18 starts a little lower because of maybe some budgetary uncertainty within the state budget system. Do you have a chart to overlay sort of the state budget systems in terms of turnover between state employees? If
through the chair, Senator Wilson, so not on the same chart, but if you go back to the, you know, one of the earlier slides, so I think going all the way back to slide 5, you know, you could see the turnover rate again since 2015, but we don't have the same data consistently going back farther in time. So, you know, we don't have a consistent source of data that would show the turnover rate from 2003 through 2022, because of the change in the state accounting system, it's just very difficult to get data that looks identical from before and after that transition.
And
follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would just be interesting to see if turnover sort of changes within that time or the retention rate. But also, do we have any data to show sort of the generational turnover or retention rate? The differences between your Xers and boomers versus your millennials and zennials?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm not sure if DRB can link up the age of the person when they enter. They do have that data showing the average age that people enter the system, but I'm not sure if it links up to this data, and I can ask them if they can, if that's a data point we can add for these sort of comparisons.
Okay. Follow up.
Thank you. Yeah, Mr. Chair, just wondering if sort of the I don't want to say the younger generation, but some of the millennials and zennials with what we call the gig economy, who just doesn't have that same work ethic of I'm going to work 30 years in one job, but just wants to do a little bit more and have a little bit more flexibility within jobs, makes a difference in this data that's being presented to us and their sort of longevity of state service.
Right, so he'll do what he can to bring that data back if it's available.
Mr. Senator Wilson, one thing I would add, though, is that, you know, when we look at FY03 and the 03 to 06 average and 07 to 10, you know, these are happening, you know, just a couple of years apart. I don't think there's going to be a massive generational difference between somebody who entered state employment in FY06 versus who entered in FY07. So when we look at, like, the next few slides, where we're looking year by year, you know, you can see whether there's a massive shift from year to year or whether it's gradual. So I think that may help answer some of the question.
Okay.
So as we go to slide 14, this is another way to look at some of the same data. So here, again, we're looking at the state only, and we're looking at the PERS non-police and fire employees only. And just zooming in on two different years, year 6 and year 11. I chose those 2 years because they're right after key vesting dates. So for both the retirement systems, the defined benefit and defined contribution, after 5 years you vest in the system. For the defined benefit system, after 10 years you also vest in the healthcare system. So looking at who remains after those vesting dates kind of helps give you a comparison of how those vesting dates may influence behavior. And so in this case, we're looking at how many people are still there after 6 years by which year they started. So we're just treating each year independently here. So you can see people entered in FY03, how many are still there in FY06, and so on. In red, we have those 4 defined benefit years. In blue, we have the defined contribution years. And so the average for those defined benefit years in year 6 is 42.3% versus the DC defined contribution, it's 40.2%, so about a 2% difference. Now notice, kind of getting to Senator Wilson's question, the turnover, that retention rate for the defined contribution system has been gradually declining, from FY07 where it's about 41.6 to FY16 where it's about 39.1, whether that's due to differences in the state budget, due to generational differences or the economy, I can't really even speculate about that. But I would note that for the state here, we do see this kind of gradual downward trend, even apart from the defined contribution versus defined or defined benefit versus defined contribution split. On the right, we have year 11. So that's the year after for the defined benefit folks when they would vest in their health insurance. And then defined contribution, I don't think there's a special vesting after 10 years for defined contribution. So there's less of a difference after year 11. The defined benefit, about 30.2% of people remain. Defined contribution, about 29.3%, so about 1% difference. And there's not as much of a slope on that line as there was with the year 6, for whatever reason. And again, it could be that, people entering in FY11, they're staying through FY22, they've weathered quite a few changes in the state budget. It may matter less, I'm not sure, but you don't see that clear trend like you do in year 6, where there's definitely a downward slope to that line.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Painter, would you say that it doesn't seem like retirement's an issue when it comes to retention?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, I'm not trying to make any conclusions. I'm trying to present the data, and you as the decision makers can make conclusions.
Just statistically speaking, Mr. Chair, if I could.
Yeah.
So just statistically, there's not much of a difference between year 11. Yes, no?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, there's about a 1% difference. We don't have the level of data granularity that I would need to do statistical tests to see if that's statistically significant or not. That's, again, something I hope to get for future looks at this, but the division was not able to provide us data that's on the observation level where I could do a test of statistical significance.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, leaving aside the fact that we're looking at about half the pool here, if we're not looking changing into, if we don't allow for changing into and out of municipal employers, what is the relevance of different economic conditions? I just think about, on that right-hand chart, someone who worked for the state from FY03 to 14 was in a pretty good economic period, a lot of other jobs you could go get. But someone who worked for the state, as you mentioned, from FY11 through 22, we've had significant economic downturns, not as many private sector jobs to go compete for, not as many municipal jobs to go compete for. How do you factor that into this?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I think there's a lot of factors that can go into why people would leave. And, our economy in Alaska has often moved at a bit of an inverse relationship with the national economy. When the national economy has been very strong, sometimes we've had a downturn, and vice versa, because of oil prices often, flip-flopping with how the national economy is going. So that certainly will influence employee decisions. And, you know, if we're comparing, we don't have the TERS data in front of us, but, you know, if you compare different employee types, there's certainly a difference in just the normal retention of different professions. You know, I wish that I could get this data to say whether to see this at, you know, just certain job classes only, because I would suspect that there's certain job classes like accountants who can move in and out of the private sector more easily than some other job classes that may be more restricted to the state, more specialized, that, you know, may be less of a difference with economic conditions than other positions. So that may be a factor. I can't tell you, you know, statistically how much of a factor any of that would be, but I would suspect it would affect different job classes with different strength, you know, with something like an accountant. I would expect that the national economic conditions have a lot of effect on whether they choose to stay with the state or go to a private sector employer. For somebody who's a, you know, career scientist at the Department of Fish and Game, it may not be as much of a factor for them.
Okay. Next slide, please.
So now we'll talk about kind of a different topic for a second, which is, so in the state of Alaska, in addition to that defined benefit or defined contribution system, all state of Alaska employees are in the Supplemental Annuity Plan, or SBS, which is a defined contribution plan that's a Social Security replacement that has a 6.13% employee contribution matched by a 6.13% employer contribution. So really, people who are in that defined benefit state system have a hybrid plan. They have a defined benefit pension, and then they also have this SBS plan that is essentially a defined contribution plan. For people who are in the defined contribution plan, they essentially have two parallel defined contribution plans, the main defined contribution and then the SBS as well. For the non-state PERS employers, there's variation. And so of the 14,000 current non-state, non-police and fire PERS employees who are in the defined contribution system, I know that's a lot of qualifiers. So this is basically of the people who are employed right now who don't work for the state, who are in PERS, about half of them, 7,473, are in Social Security rather than SBS as their supplemental system. About 1,600 of them, are in SBS, like the state. And then 5,000 of them are in neither plan. So they have no supplemental plan at all. And the handouts that you have in front of you show the details by employer. So you can see which employers are in which system. So I'm not going to go over these handouts. I'm just going to sort of cover them. And then if you have questions, I'm happy to cover them. But, you know, essentially this is just doing the details by employer. So attachment one, handout one, shows the employees who are in SBS, and this includes the state of Alaska. So it's the total at the bottom of there includes the state, whereas on my slide it doesn't. Attachment two shows the employers that are in Social Security. So that's that 7,473 current DC employees or defined contribution employees who are in Social Security as the supplemental plan. And then finally, the last list shows the 5,045 employers, employees who are in neither system. And so this includes some school district employees who are in PERS. That's basically the non-teachers who are going to be in PERS, and then the teachers will be in TERS, which we'll talk about at a future presentation. So you can see the breakout of those different employers. So the data that we have separates the non-state employers who are in SBS versus those who are not in SBS. So some of those are in Social Security, some of those are not. So we're kind of lumping in together two different categories that may be very different. I think, again, in the future, we may try to break that out more fully to see the difference between those who are in Social Security and those who are not. But for now, we have three categories. So we have the employees who are the employers, the state as an employer. We have the employees who are in SBS, And then we have the employees who are not in SBS, who may be either in Social Security or not in a supplemental system at all. And so the next few comparisons will show those non-state employees.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Painter, just to make sure I got it straight in my mind, if you're a state employee and you are not in SBS, but you've elected to be in Social Security, you don't get that extra 6.13% contribution from the state either?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, so all state employees are in SBS. Okay. For those non-state employers, they can either elect to be in Social Security, in which case in Social Security there's the contribution by the employee and the employer are very similar to SBS. I think now it's slightly higher than that SBS contribution. Back when the SBS election was first made, I think they were the same, and now they've shifted. But for those, they get about 6.2% put in by both the, you know, their employer and the employee, but then it goes into Social Security, which has a defined benefit calculation. Whereas those who are in SBS, it goes into a defined contribution plan, essentially, where that's invested by the employee.
Okay. Next slide.
Okay, so this next slide, kind of similar in format to the one a few slides ago. So this is comparing for those. These are the non-SBS employees. So there's, again, fewer of these for the non-state, non-SBS employees. And again, not police and fire. So these are the regular government employees. Again, we've put them into four-year classes for averaging and then normalize them all to the same start year. For these, I would note the retention rate after year one is 60 to 62%. The state was roughly 69 or 70%. So these ones have a lower retention rate after the first year, and indeed lower retention rates overall than those employees of the state. And so for these, the blue line is the defined benefit years from 03 to 06. The green line, or the red line here, is FY07 through 10, the defined contribution employees. The green line is FY11 through 14, and then the purple line is FY15 through 18. And here, there's a little bit larger difference than we saw for the state between the FY03 through 06 class and then the other classes. You know, we'll get into the year by year, but in many of these years, it's about 3 or 4% during years 6 through 9, and then, or 6 to 10, and then decreasing a little bit in the last couple of years of data. So these ones, it's a little bit bigger of a difference. And again, these are the employees who do not have a supplemental system, so they only have that defined benefit or defined contribution system for their retirement. And there's a lot of data on the slide, so I'll pause for everyone.
It's fine. Next slide.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, the slide 17, again, is comparing just years 6 and years 11 for these same employees. And so in year 6, on the left in red, we have the defined contribution years, and on the right in blue, we have the defined benefit. Sorry, left in red, we have the defined benefit years, and on the right in blue, we have the defined contribution years. And the difference in the average is about 4%. Where after in year 6, the defined benefit system employees, about 37% remain versus about 33% of defined contribution employees. In year 11, the average is 26% for the 26.2% for the defined benefit employees on the left, 23.8% for the defined contribution employees on the right. So about a 2.5% difference between those two. And unlike the state, again, there's not really a whole lot of a slope to the defined contribution line. So it was really just the state employees that we saw that. There's not really a huge linear trend other than just the difference between the defined benefit FY05 and 06 in particular, and then those defined contribution years.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I was doing good a minute ago. Remind me, these folks do or do not have Social Security?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, so this is a mix of those who do have Social Security and those who do not. So about I think a bit over half of these people are in Social Security and a bit under half are not in Social Security. So it's a hybrid. So some of them may have, you know, a retirement that, you know, has that supplemental system and some don't. So it's not a homogenous group, which definitely makes the comparison not quite as stark as it might be if you separated those out.
Mr. Chairman, just to make sure I understand it, the slide's not a hybrid. Some folks have a hybrid, some folks don't. The slide's an amalgam.
Right.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Okay, next slide.
Okay, this next slide, slide 18, we are looking at the just comparing the three employer types for the FY03 to 06 employees, so the defined benefit employees, to see just how the employer type may change the retention rates. So we're comparing, again, these are all defined benefit employees, all started FY03 through 06, but comparing in blue, we have the state as an employer. In red, we have the non-state SBS employers. And in green, we have the non-state non-SBS employers. So again, they may be in Social Security, they may not be. And with that, with this comparison, we see a significant and persistent difference between those non-SBS employers and both the state as an employer and the other SBS employees. Through year 7, it's very persistent. And then after that, the state actually has better retention than even the non-SBS employers. Some of that, you know, could be just because with employee movement, you know, the state has that many more employees than any other PERS employer. So if somebody moves from, you know, Juneau to Anchorage, municipal government, they would show as leaving an employer. But within the state, you may have mobility to many agencies in many locations. So we kind of expect that the state may have better retention over the long term than any particular PERS employer because we have that statewide presence and the most employees. But it really takes until, you know, year 7 or year 8 really to show up that the state has better retention than other PERS employers. And again, those non-SBS employers have worse retention kind of throughout the period than the state and those SBS employers.
Okay, next slide, please.
Okay, and then this next slide, again, is comparing, you know, just like employees together. So this is the defined contribution employees with the three employers. So the blue line is the state as an employer. The red line is the non-state SBS employers. The green line is the non-state non-SBS employers. And again, the biggest difference we see is the difference between those SBS employers, the state and other employers, and then the non-SBS employers, where those employers have a significantly lower retention rate in all years in the defined contribution plan. And the difference between them is a bit larger than we saw in the previous slide, because as we saw a few slides ago, those non-SBS employers went with the switch to defined contribution, have a lower retention rate and a bigger difference after the switch in systems than the state and those SBS employers. So the non-SBS employers, there's definitely a bigger difference with the switch in retirement systems, and they also just have a lower baseline retention rate to begin with, as we saw in the previous slide.
So, Mr. Painter, is the state telling these non-state employers, mainly the municipalities and a few others, not to be in SBS and not to be in Social Security, or is that a voluntary decision at their level?
Mr. Chairman, that's a voluntary decision at their level.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To follow up on the chairman's question, what windows open to change the other way, go back?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, my understanding is that the SBS system, that election can only be made to get out of Social Security into SBS. Employers can still opt into Social Security and then could immediately transition from Social Security to SBS, but that would require two different votes by the union, by the membership of those employees, and action by the employer. I don't want to get too much in the mechanics of how to do that. I think the Division of Retirement Benefits could probably cover that better than I could about how what steps the municipality would have to take to get there. There is a way to get to that, but I believe it requires a vote of the employees.
And Senator Keel, we could ask the department that question when they come here in more detail, because I think it needs to be understood. And also that when we get into the teacher's retirement system also, and the question may come up, the Social Security offsets. So we'll have that conversation then also. That was one reason why I think it's beneficial to have a separate meeting on the teacher's retirement system, to keep some of these issues separate and make it clear to the public and the members in the building what we're actually dealing with. So we have a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little loath to ask the question on this slide, given that we don't have a breakout of non-state employers by who's in Social Security and who's not. But it sounds like I'll ask Senator Wilson's question the other direction. Is it fair to say that the value of a retirement plan does make a difference?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, you know, again, I don't want to make any conclusions, but I would say that there's definitely a difference between the non-SPS employers and the SPS. I think any test of statistical significance would probably show up that 8% would be statistically significant. I don't know if it's, you know, again, because we don't have that breakdown between Social Security and not, it does seem like that SPS system does seem to have value, unless there's some underlying characteristics to these employers that I don't know about, that why they'd be less desirable. But that seems like a fair conclusion. But
Senator Wilson.
Thank you. And Dr. Painter, you did say that the state seems to have better retention than some of these other small municipal employers. So we don't have any exit interview data on these folks to say whether a small city, borough may just be a toxic work environment or just be a bad employer and workforce.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. Correct. We don't have exit interviews of people at, you know, especially the non-state employers. I think the state does do exit interviews. I'm not sure if they categorize that data in a way that would be usable. But yeah, we don't know why people are leaving. And also, we would just expect that a small employer is going to have higher turnover over time than a larger employer. It'll have less room to advance, less room to remain with that employer if you need to move geographically. We would just expect that. But again, I'm not sure, given that there's a difference between those non-state SBS employers and non-state non-SBS, you know, the only difference that I know of between those is the retirement systems. I don't know if there's other systematic differences between those employers.
And just as a reminder, we do have in the packet and handouts, and it'll be online, a breakdown of all the employers. For example, Juneau Borough School District has 274 people that have are neither in Social Security nor a supplemental benefit system. So that does impact their ability to accumulate assets for retirement. There's no question about that. But there's a list. There's actually 5,045 people around the state, citizens around the state. And that might be some issue that this committee may want to address in some future meeting or future legislation or what have you. I don't think there's any interest and having people not in Social Security and or SBS, supplemental benefit system. Because everybody in the country, unless they opt out, is in Social Security. It's not voluntary, it's mandatory. So I think they have a issue here that we need to work on from a policy perspective. Any questions on the presentation? Do we have any final comments from the presenter today?
Mr. Chairman, thank you for having me. And I, you know, there's obviously a lot more data that we could get, and I hope to get and be able to provide more in-depth analysis and more statistical power. So, you know, this is sort of the first step, and I'm happy to have the committee questions of some areas to look at in the future.
Okay, and we will be having you back and having a special meeting on TERS, the teacher's retirement system, looking at the contribution rates and the inclusion, exclusion of Social Security, the supplemental benefit system and the potential impact on the teachers' retention and retirement. So we're just putting that data set and data together so we will be in a better position to make an informed decision, whatever that decision is, with some data to back it up. And we'll be also working with the retirement and benefits to get answers to some of our other questions. So with that concludes the meeting today. I'd like to thank Legislative Finance for putting the data set together, coming in and presenting it to us, and we'll work with you and your time schedule. I know you have budgets of the other body and the budget here at this table to dance around as we work on these other policy issues. So we'll work with your schedule and have you back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. That's tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. The Department of Revenue will give the committee a status update on the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund. There's some legislation that the committee will be working on concerning the management of that portfolio. So we'll have some of those discussions tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We are adjourned at 10:13 a.m. We are adjourned.